The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey Bills fans, welcome to another episode of Circling the Wagons, the Buffalo Rumblings podcast, and the only podcast giving you information on the first day of tampering in free agency. I'm joined by my co-hosts, John and Mike. Fellas, how's it going? First day?
Let's go, Bills.
Yeah, Bills making moves. Mike?
Nate, what is up? Great to be with you.
Great to be with you, too. So this is super informal. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm your host, Nate. Today, Monday, March 11th, was the first day of quote-unquote tampering of free agency. What a weird way of describing free agency tampering. Doesn't it just make it sound illegal or something?
I'm sure the Patriots are having a field day today.
Yeah, we're going to discuss a little bit of what's happening on the AFC East. But yeah, just
who calls it tampering?
I think that's just the official free agent tamper. I think if you look at NFL.com,
can't be the official like the NFL.
No, that's not what they just call it. The first probably open lines of communication between agents and players. This is because you can't formally sign anything. It's just everything is reported. So literally within, you know, days, even though we're reporting it and everyone else, Schefter and Ian Rapoport has reported it, it could literally...
It's like calling something the fraud period. Like, it just... I'm objecting to you to you calling it a tampering period.
Wait. Let's go back. The frog period? Did you just make that up, or is that like a psychology term?
No, it's just... Like, I don't know what it's called.
No.
You like you naming it?
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm just going to... I think it's just called the tampering period. So players can't officially sign, but they can basically lock up things with players and, you know, barring certain things that they can, you know, I mean, players can easily decide not to go places if they want to. Like we're going to get into Frank Gore in a minute, but just a couple of years ago, Frank Gore decided to go to Indianapolis instead of Philadelphia, where he was supposed to sign. So guys can back out. It doesn't happen. It's not common, but it has happened. Mind you, some of these guys, they're not very clear cut. You know, this is an awesome player or this is a crappy player. There's just thoughts on both sides of each of these guys. So we're just kind of going to inform the listeners in this podcast, this episode, and just generally roundtable discuss these players. So the first guy that was officially or unofficially reportedly signing with the Bills was former Houston Texans cornerback Kevin Johnson. And former first-round pick Johnson was selected 16th overall in the 2015 NFL draft out of Wake Forest. Johnson was released by the Texans last week after struggling with a number of injuries over the past three seasons.
Struggling.
This signing doesn't factor in the compensatory pick formula because of his status as a free agent, but it's more or less just veteran cornerback depth behind, you know, Tre'Davious White, starting cornerbacks Tre'Davious White and Levi Wallace at this point. Levi Wallace obviously had a really great end of the season as an undrafted free agent cornerback last year, but they're just looking to add depth. This regime is very big on defensive back depth, whether it's at the safety or the cornerback position. So this doesn't come as a surprise. This guy obviously has talent, but he's had injury history. I think it's one of those things where, you know, I guess we'll just see. Hopefully he can just add some depth. I'm not necessarily high on the signing. I'm not low on the signing. It's just, you know, more depth in the secondary, in the defense. So is that kind of how you guys see it? Do you guys have anything more to add on this signing?
Well, the Bills are young at the position, right? So anytime you have a veteran with that pedigree, I think it's good. But, I mean, on the downside, when I was reading ESPN, like, their picture of him, he's committing pass interference. So it's like, huh.
Or is that the one
we'll
where,
have to see.
Is that the one where he's trying to discuss with the ref, like trying to argue with the ref, like, no, no, that wasn't pass interference?
Oh, no, this one, he was actually, you can see the ball in the air with Chris Hogan about to catch it, but Johnson is just draped all over, pulling his arms down.
Not even looking back at the ball. That's not ideal. That's not an ideal picture. But hey, even the best cornerbacks do that. That's funny. That's funny. The one that I'm looking at BuffaloRumblings.com for all of this, by the way, because we're a Buffalo Rumblings podcast and because it's just a quick, easy way to get all of the information you need in free agency. The picture that they chose was him trying to talk to the referee saying, no, that wasn't pass interference. I didn't do it. So it's just funny. Funny that those are the pictures that have...
very small sample size.
Very small sample
two
size.
2 out of 2.
Yeah.
2 out of 2. Terrible.
2 out of 2. John, what do you think about the signing? Are you for or against it?
Yeah, I'm for it. Yeah, I agree with you guys. They definitely need some more secondary depth, and this was a good way to do it. Had a veteran presence.
Exactly, exactly. Maybe the Bills can get the most out of them using them in their defense. You know, somebody brought up this point on Twitter that, you know, E.J. Gaines a couple of years ago was very often injured, and he ended up being a good depth signing. So maybe this is another E.J. Gaines sort of signing. We don't know exactly how many years or for how much money Johnson has been signed for. So I'm going to assume, knowing Brandon Bean, that let me know what you guys think of this. I'm guessing it's either for a short contract because he has an injury history. So I'm guessing like it's a prove it 1 or 2 year contract with decent, you know, very average money, nothing crazy. Or it's like a 3 or 4 year contract with pretty average money, but like they can get out of it after a year or two and like basically lose nothing. Does that sound about right to you guys?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So very, if I know Brandon Bean, he didn't overpay at all for Kevin Johnson. So probably promised him playing time and a prove it deal or just a long, you know, very low, low risk, which is great, which is what we want from our GM for this type of move. All right. Now let's go into the second signing of the day. The second signing I did not see coming whatsoever, and it was started to be reported by Mike Garofalo of NFL Network, I believe, where I should say ancient running back. The guy's still a beast, though. But 35-year-old running back Frank Gore signed with the Bills for a reported 1 year, $2 million deal. Now, I don't know about you guys, but when thinking about the Bills roster in general, you have LeSean McCoy, who's 30 years old. You have Chris Ivory, that's 30 years old. You have Marcus Murphy, who's a very young guy. He's only been in the league for a couple of seasons, so we have some youth there. But I guess the thought was that it would be someone with more youth than Frank Gore. Did that signing catch you guys off guard?
Yeah, I didn't expect it either. You know,
well, no matter what you think about running backs, right? Their age, like it. It's statistical outlier to have the Bills to have the top three oldest. It's not like the number one oldest, the number two oldest. It's the top three. And Gore, by such a wide margin, too, right? Like Chris Ivory is number two on the list at 30 years old, and Frank Gore is 35. That's over 5 years difference. That's crazy.
That's true. Well, there's two things, too, to take into account. Like, at least Gore, like his presence is going to be, I think, really good for the younger players on the team. Kind of more of a leader, a role type of player. He's not going to start. Obviously, McCoy is the starter. And then also, I think they might have gotten him a little bit because of his ability to pass protect, something where I think Marcus Murphy might have been a bit of a liability last season. I still definitely think they should draft a guy. Obviously not in the first few rounds or whatever, but they should draft a guy at some point, maybe on the second or third day, and bring him up. What do you think?
So I was really down when I heard this signing, mostly for the reason that Mike said. It's age. These guys are old, and they're just adding more age to that backfield. But then, you know, I was asking people on Twitter, John, and, you know, to your point, I think it was more of a leadership mentality. They wanted someone to go along with LeSean McCoy to help with pass protection and to give some veteran presence. And let's be honest, like, even though Frank Gore's 35, the guy's been a pro's pro, and he's only produced wherever he has. In fact, Pro Football Focus mentioned today that he was 11th among all running backs with an overall grade of 81.4 in 2018. Like, that's insane. He was 11th best in the league by Pro Football Focus standards. So that's huge. Obviously, I don't know, you know, we all play fantasy football, so I don't know if you guys ever had Kenyon Drake, but it was very frustrating to own Kenyon Drake if you had the Miami Dolphins backfield, because Frank Gore was always, you know, getting more touches. It seemed more and more each week, and you're like, what are you doing? You know, and then, you know, there's a reason why. It's because he was producing, you know. And then I'll also read this. I'll read this tweet from Dave Richard of Fantasy Football, CBS Fantasy Football. And he wrote a really interesting thing. He said, Frank Gore is a durable, dirt cheap, and has intel on the Jets' new offense and the Dolphins' personnel, plus whatever he can share on the Patriots' defense. So fantasy fans will make the puke face on his signing, but it's a smart one for the Bills. And the more I thought about it, and the more I kind of, you know, just mulled it over, I'm okay with the signing. But let me ask you guys this. There's no way the Bills are going to keep Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy, and Chris Ivory on the roster, right? There's absolutely no way. So here's how I see it. They're obviously not going to cut Frank Gore. They just signed him, unless he gets injured or something catastrophic happens. So now it leaves between the cuts of being either Chris Ivory or LeSean McCoy. And right now, based on SpoTrack, LeSean McCoy has the third highest cap hit of any running back in the NFL. So I think one of two things happens. Either LeSean McCoy gets cut and the Bills save like $7 million in cap space, or he gets a chance to restructure his deal, or they just flat out cut Chris Ivory. So I guess that's three different options. So, I mean, I guess if I had to guess, I think they really like LeSean McCoy and are probably going to cut Chris Ivory, or they could restructure and still cut Chris Ivory. What do you guys think?
I agree. I think they're going to cut Chris Ivory, but they could also trade McCoy potentially.
No, that's another option I didn't bring up. I wonder what the market on McCoy has got to be so bad after last year, though. People thinking it's because of his age and there were some injuries. So,
his offensive line was terrible.
That's true. That's true. We're going to get to offensive line signings in a minute, but that's a good point.
But after 30, you fall off a cliff usually. Like, what teams are looking to give up assets for that?
Yeah, exactly.
I think one, like, I understand that, yeah, the Bills are just signed Gore, right? It's exciting, but you've got to think they've given themselves a way out if he has training camp comes and he just doesn't have it, right? They're protecting themselves too.
Good point. They get into camp, they have a look at all four of them, or all the four running backs, and I'm sure they're gonna draft someone at some point, maybe later in this draft. John, you're hoping that they take someone in the first round like they usually do or have in past regimes?
No thanks.
If you guys don't know, John has basically banged on the drum for this podcast of the Bills not taking running backs in the first round like they have in past regimes. I don't think this regime would do that, to be honest. I think they might be smart enough to not do that.
Regime sounds like you're talking about a third world dictator, man.
This okay.
Like it's being toppled every 2 years by a military coup.
Well, it basically is being toppled every couple years in Buffalo. So, but no, you're right. I should say front office. Is that better, Mike? It sounds less like a coup, like whoever has the most
a little better.
Whoever has the most guns within that country or region.
Administration? The current administration?
Administration. It sounds like a company then, a corporation. The next free agent signing comes from the Cincinnati Bengals. It is free agent tight end Tyler Kroft, who is reportedly, according to Ian Rappaport, on a three-year, basically a $19 million deal, but it can be worth $21 million with incentives, which is roughly around $6 million a year, give or take. And basically, let's see, hold on. Kroft is coming off a foot injury that caused him to miss 11 games in 2018, which landed him on season-ending injured reserve. But 2017 was somewhat of a breakout year compared to his 2 years prior with 42 catches, 404 yards, and 7 touchdowns. That was another year that Bengals tight end Tyler Eifert was injured, which he has been very injured in recent past. And Kroft, though, was primarily used as a blocker during his time with the Bengals. So he's 6'6", 250 pounds, and he could potentially be a red zone threat for Josh Allen and the Bills offense. So it's not a cheap deal. It's definitely less than what they were paying Charles Clay. Charles Clay was averaging around $9 million a year. So at around $6 million a year, he's definitely less money. Supposedly, he's a good blocker, and he has the ability to catch the ball if he stays healthy. So again, kind of like the Kevin Johnson signing, you know, this is a guy that's signed based on potential. And you guys know my thoughts on tight ends, right? About how many years it takes to develop, right? Or is this new? I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast.
Let me guess. 3 years?
So I... Four? Oh, close. John's right on this one. It's actually
five.
It actually is 5 years. So I read
this. You know the average player is in the NFL three, right?
No, I didn't know that. So that sounds about right. But I read this book by Jonathan Bales, which is basically called Fantasy Football for Smart People. And they talked about how many years it takes every position from being drafted to make an impact statistically on an offense. So even though blocking will never be, you know, shown statistically, as a receiver, it takes tight ends the longest to become statistically relevant in the NFL compared to college football. So it just, for whatever reason, I think it has a lot to do with blocking schemes and route running, unlike other. So if you look at all the really good tight ends in this league, like Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz, all these guys took about 4 or 5 years to really make themselves known. It really is their second contract where they become relevant in the NFL. If they're going to be, not all these guys are going to be, but if they're going to be.
You're crazy, man. What about Gronkowski? What about Aaron Hernandez? Aaron Hernandez was, I mean, killing people before then. You know what I mean? Like
before his fifth year, yeah.
Yeah.
Literally, yeah. He'd already committed.
Yeah, and out of the league. And you still want him to like be learning blocking schemes. Like in today's world, it's like produce in your rookie year.
Yeah, I think Aaron Hernandez had committed his second felony by his fifth year. His second killing. It's just statistics. Look at those guys. Look at Tony Gonzalez. Look at all the guys that have really done well in the NFL, the tight end position. It took them 4 or 5 years to really acclimate and become, not that they didn't put up numbers in general, but they're always outliers like Gronkowski.
Maybe that's a function of the league not recognizing their value. And now, like when we're writing the book, oh, it's 5 years in and we realize the tight end is a pass catcher position.
I think it just takes these guys that long. I think the college game is just that much different from the pro game. It's just like I always say, Mike, you kind of alluded to it earlier, wide receivers. Wide receivers take a long time to acclimate to the NFL to become statistically consistent. But then, you know, by your point, Mike, you could say, well, Julio Jones and AJ Green, it's like, yeah, those guys are outliers, though. It does take wide receivers roughly their third year to break out statistically and become relevant. So if you're looking at it from our standpoint, like Zay Jones would have his best year as long as he's healthy this year. And you see it with a lot of these wide receivers out there. Just pay attention.
He doesn't have too far to climb, does he? Like if that's the bar.
Yeah. Catch roughly 50 to 60% of his balls instead of 20 or 30. Yeah, that'd be ideal. So this is, I'm okay with this signing. I kind of like it. I know Joe Biscaglia mentioned that he loves it. So I trust a guy like him more than more than my attention to fantasy football and those sorts of information. I mean, 42 catches, 404 yards, and 7 touchdowns would have been a great season for the Bills last season, and that was his best year. So it's possible that he could come out and do something like that. And the Bills don't really have anyone on their roster besides Logan Thomas. Or I'm sorry, not Logan Thomas, Jason Kroom. So what are you guys' thoughts on the signing? Are you high, low, meh? What do you think?
No, I think it's good. The tight end is definitely one of their biggest needs. I still think they should draft a guy on top of it, just much like the running back scenario. As far as the whole like 5 years thing to develop and all that, I think you're thinking too much from the fantasy perspective and maybe not like the contributing to the team perspective on that one.
Nate, you're going to let that go unchallenged?
I was going to see if you were going to pile on first before I continued for my defense. So, like, let me go back to what you were saying, John, is that I don't think that these guys are just do nothing for 5 years and then all of a sudden they become relevant. Like, they kind of gradually become, if they're going to be a top five or top 10 tight end, you know, they don't become that usually until their fifth year. So guys can produce and they have done well. Usually it's just not that common compared to all the tight ends that are drafted. It's just rare. And when you're talking about drafting a tight end, which I definitely think they should draft a tight end, I hear that this tight end is very deep in tight end depth, which is great. And I think the Bills will draft one, at least in the mid rounds or possibly later, that this is a great bridge blocking tight end that has some receiving capability to allow a guy that you do draft this year to come into his own in 2 or 3 years and become the lead tight end, become the Travis Kelce or the Zach Ertz or Rob Gronkowski of this team if he's going to be that way. So they needed a veteran. They got one. Now they can draft one and not feel weird about it or not feel like they have to rely on him. So, Mike, you good with the signing?
I mean, they're desperate. Yeah. He seems like a good option.
Yeah.
hopefully they get him on the upswing and not the downturn. Mm-hmm. Downswing? Is downswing a word?
Nope, you just made it up.
All right, downturn. Hopefully it's the upswing and not the downturn.
Yeah, well, the Bills...
I mean, very, very encouraging.
Very encouraging, but... yep. And again, we'll see. I know that the Bills were going after tight end Dwayne Allen, which just signed with the Miami Dolphins.
Good. Can't wait to play him twice a year.
Yep, and tight end Jesse James from the Steelers just reportedly signed with the Detroit Lions, excuse me. So yeah, and now leads to the pinnacle of free agency so far. This might be the biggest signing that the Bills have this season, which is something that if you guys listen to the Q&A Rumblings podcast with Matt Warren, he discussed this as the most important need for the Bills all offseason in free agency was to land a veteran center. And the Bills did that today. They signed former Kansas City Chiefs center Mitch Morse, and this is a huge signing. He was listed as one of the top centers in the league. He's at a peak age. He's in the prime of his career. He's 26 years old. He's proven to be a superior pass protector. He was the anchor for one of the league's most prolific offenses, and considered one of the best free agent offensive linemen on the market. I mean, if you guys watched or even paid attention at least a little bit to the Kansas City Chiefs offense, I mean, he was great calling protections. I mean, this is the kind of guy that the Bills need at center and that they obviously didn't have last year with Russell Bodine or Ryan Groy, and they've really missed since Eric Wood's sudden retirement. He's listed as 6'6", 305 pounds. He started for 49 games for the Chiefs. Mitch Morse was graded as the 13th best center by Pro Football Focus in 2018. He was the 7th best center in pass blocking, the 20th best in run blocking, and he's just been great. I think this is something that if, you know, we watch the Bills, obviously, every game last season, we talked a lot after every game, and you guys know, how many times did it seem that somebody would come up through the middle, it looked like he was either unblocked or, you know, whatever. It was just, it's different when quarterbacks have pressure around the edge for defensive end or linebacker blitzing. It's one thing when they're up the middle and, you know, it basically leaves them unblocked and they're right in Josh Allen's face. It's a terrible thing for a rookie quarterback to go through and to learn from. So I was, you know, very happy about this signing. I mean, I guess I'm guessing you guys feel the same way, John.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I mean, the Bills need, between free agency and the draft, at least four more offensive linemen, probably all starters. And they got one of the best centers available in free agency. The guy's been playing with the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, Kareem Hunt. They've been doing all well. And obviously, there's more to it than that, but I'm excited.
That's funny. I read on Reddit that Mahomes actually has a weak arm, and he gained his throwing ability from touching Morris's balls while taking snaps under center. So that bodes well.
Okay. All right. That's the kind of analysis you get here at Circling the Wagons.
But look at you. The stats you mentioned, like, we need a center, but a lot of this seems like a function of just the market right now, because he's now going to be the highest paid center in the league at $11 million a year, right? And in the stats you read off, like, oh, he ranks 20th in this category, and like, it doesn't seem like the money or the skills, the rankings bear out making him the number one paid center. It's just Bills are desperate.
Yeah, at this point, I believe the contract, and I don't know if you guys have details on this, but I believe it's for a four-year, $44 million contract, I want to say, averaging $11 million a year. So does that make him the highest paid center, Mike?
It does,
but the Denver center hasn't been signed yet either, and he's probably going to get more. And also, with all these contracts at this point in time, from what I've read, it's going to definitely, like, none of them are very accurate. So we don't know exactly what the contract's going to be for sure until Wednesday.
That's true. We're going to find out a lot more even tomorrow and the day after. So we'll just have to keep, you know, Mike, you bring up a good point about having to overpay for free agents, but I think that's just common. If you don't draft well, which this franchise has not done very well previous to the Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott era. Notice I didn't say regime right there, Mike.
Thank you.
So you have to overpay for some of these spots where you have holes and you have this money that you have to spend. Like John said, we have at least four needs on the offensive line, and they've basically taken care of two of them with Spencer Long, possibly a guard, Mitch Morse definitely being the center and the anchor of this offense. And here, just some more stats I've seen from Pro Football Focus is that Mitch Morse has not allowed a sack since 2015, week 7, which is the fifth longest streak of Pro Football Focus era, the second longest active streak in the NFL. So that's great, because you know the Chiefs are passing a lot. They're not a strictly run first offense. So this is going to be huge. He had a 74. Thanks, John. He was a third ranked interior lineman entering free agency. It's just a lot of great things written about Mitch Morris. So you're right, John. I guess the big signing for the center in this year's free agency was Matt Paradise from Denver, and a lot of Bills fans were looking forward to signing him. He's a little bit older, even though he has more experience and has better grades, I believe, from Pro Football Focus. At least the Bills, I imagine this guy's going to get a higher contract because he was reportedly going between the Bills and the Jets, and he ended up, I guess he's going to end up going with the Jets. So at least the Bills, if they didn't get the best guy, at least they got the consolation prize, the guy with upside, a guy with age on his side, just hitting his prime. So that's something the Bills fans should be excited about. I'm excited about. He's a proven commodity from a great offense. So, you know, we need someone to keep Josh Allen upright, get the run game going, which is, you know, going to be key for any second year quarterback. And so I'm pretty excited about the signing. It's just worth mentioning, worth noting. Those were the major signings of today. There were guys that were rumored to be interested, or the Bills were interested in signing, but they ended up signing elsewhere. Trey Flowers, a defensive end from New England, ended up signing with the Detroit Lions today. There are some rumors about defensive end Frank Clark and defensive end D. Ford possibly being the Bills are looking at defensive end, it looks like. which is very possible that they sign another guy in free agency. So before today, we don't have final contract numbers, so I can't really speak of that. But before today, the Bills had over $70 million in cap space. They'll probably have roughly 50 to 52 million after today based on the signing. So there's plenty of space left. So I'm excited. I think I started the day pretty much thinking like, hey, you guys going to do anything? By the time we're recording this, by the time we're talking, I feel like I'm in a good spot. I think they need to, real quick, what do you guys think they should add, all things being equal? If they could add any position right now with some veteran presence in a position that the Bills have as a need, what position would you guys hope that they sign it a guy in to add to the roster that they haven't yet?
How about wide receiver? We're ranked 31st in our positional spending. It's abysmal.
That's what I was going to say, Mike. Actually, that's a really good one because I was going to say wide receiver, man. The Bills definitely need wide receiver depth. As a veteran, I mean, I think I saw the Jets sign Jamison Crowder, and I know that Golden Tate right now is still out there. I know John Brown is still out there. I know that Cole Beasley is still out there. I'm trying to think of other big free agent wide receivers, not that those are even big. I know Tyrell Williams is still out there. That might be something. But the good thing is some of these guys are going to get huge contracts. I trust Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott to not put too much money in a guy that's never been proven to be a great wide receiver yet. Bill's still possibly looking at right tackle Daryl Williams, as far as I know, has not been signed yet. So it's a possibility the Bills go after him in free agency, one of the better offensive tackles in the league. As far as other AFC East signings, it's reported that the Jets are going to sign ex-Vikings linebacker Anthony Barr, the guy that, you know, is very famous for Josh Allen hurling over. So, of course, the joke over Twitter is what, John? Gets to do it twice a year now, right?
Absolutely.
All right, that was a lame joke. Anyway, I know that the Patriots have signed defensive end Michael Bennett. Just adding that, that's got to be a backfill for Trey Flowers going. The Patriots left tackle Trent Brown is reportedly signed by the Raiders to a huge contract. Raiders just signing huge contracts left and right between Antonio Brown and now Trent Brown. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the week goes. I really hope. So Mike, we're talking about free agent signings, wide receiver, I guess right tackle or possibly left tackle if they want to slide Deion Dawkins over would be a huge need. John, was there another need that you wanted to discuss?
No, I think you got it with wide receiver and another offensive lineman. Another potential would be like an edge rusher or interior lineman, whether maybe another role player on defense type of thing.
Another rotational guy, perhaps, on the defensive line.
Yeah, I could see something like that too.
Yeah, definitely. I see that too. I see them adding. So they're going to add a lot of depth after this first wave of free agency. And I think we're going to see some of these things, you know, some of these areas, either tackle or wide receiver, or, you know, even the positions that we think the Bills are pretty set at, you know, just signing guys. Like you said, defensive tackle, we're in decent shape, but I could see them adding more depth to that, or defensive end. You know, I think the Bills could use a really good pass rusher on the other side of Jerry Hughes. I'm not ready to write off Trent Murphy yet or Shaq Lawson, barring, you know, Trent Murphy should be healthy this year, so that'll be good. But I could see them adding just another guy in for rotation and saying that we're good with that and maybe not even having to sign someone. That, or possibly cutting Trent Murphy. That's been discussed before on this podcast as well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the Bills go from here. All right, so I think we covered a lot. Bills have roughly $50 to $55 million in spending cap space. They still have 10 draft picks, a lot of depth to be added on this team. A lot of these players, let's say because they have Mitch Morse, they can still draft a center later and develop him, or, you know, draft a guard or whatever, and there's still, you know, room to draft a tight end. Now you just don't have to draft him in the first round. I mean, it just, the good thing about free agency depth is it affords you the ability to not have to draft so high at a certain position. So I'm excited to see where the Bills go from here. I don't think there's going to be any huge splash signings, but if there is, you know, we'll try to get together and record a podcast and talk about it as we can. And as long as, like I mentioned in our last episode, baby number two doesn't come for old Nate Dogg over here, then I think we're in good shape. So you guys want to sign off?
Hey, do you think they could, like, you know, they were looking into Antonio Brown. What if they try to trade for, like, Beckham? Do you think they would do that?
I think that, yes, I think that they would look into it. By the way, so we're not going to get into Antonio Brown a lot, but one thing that was encouraging to me as a Bills fan, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, is the fact that they just were willing to go after him. You know, the willingness to even kick the tires, talk about it. Obviously, in the end, it didn't work out. But with past regimes, I don't think they would have done that. I don't think Doug Whaley would have traded for LeSean McCoy if it wasn't offered right to him. I don't think he would have even called about him. I think that I'm encouraged by the fact that Bean was willing to call the Pittsburgh GM, see what it cost, see if it was worth pursuing or not. So I think that Brandon Bean would definitely inquire about it if he thought that the compensation would be worth it. And he also obviously has that relationship with Dave Gettleman, who is a Giants GM, who was the GM of the Carolina Panthers when Brandon Bean was the assistant GM. So there's that relationship. I have this feeling, though, that unlike Antonio Brown, who wanted to get out of Pittsburgh and was willing to do it for whatever, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is going to require a lot more than a third and a fifth round pick that Antonio Brown cost. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think he'd inquire about it, but I don't think it's a realistic possibility. What do you think, John? What do you think about that? I would love the idea of Odell Beckham Jr. coming to Buffalo because he'd instantly upgrade the entire wide receiving core, but I'm not sure if it'd be worth the cap hit plus the amount of draft picks that you'd have to give up for it. What do you think, John?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I would think that, you know, what it would cost trade-wise would be similar to Brown. I don't think it would be a ton more. Although, I mean, I guess, yeah, Pittsburgh was just looking to unload him too.
Yeah.
So,
I think the compensation would be much more just because Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't said he wants out in the same way that Antonio Brown was. And I think part of that was Le'Veon Bell is leaving via free agency, which we haven't heard about Le'Veon Bell going anywhere yet, surprisingly. But the Pittsburgh Steelers basically got nothing for Le'Veon Bell, for one of the best running backs in the league. So I think they wanted to walk away from the Antonio Brown situation with something instead of having him sit a year and then releasing him or whatever. So I think that was a different situation. I think that the Giants would want a lot more than a third and a fifth. I'm guessing at first, at least one first. And I don't think that Brandon Bean would necessarily give that up. Do you?
No, and I wouldn't want to give up a first for a receiver anyway.
If the Bills were better on offensive line and wouldn't possibly use that, you know, that first round pick on a stud left tackle or whatever, I don't know. I don't see him. I would be actually okay with a first round pick. I think that it's very hard to find a receiver with that kind of talent in the first round. And like I always say, it takes 3 years to develop a wide receiver. So you get him in the prime of his career, but he also has that huge cap hit because I believe he's not the highest paid wide receiver in the league right now, but he's up there. He's up there for sure. He's top. He's got to be top five. So you got to take the cap hit and the draft capital's loss. So Mike, what do you think? First of all, would you take Odell Beckham Jr.? And second of all, do you think it's realistic that Bean would go for him?
I'd take him. I don't think it's realistic. I think he's the face of the franchise for the Giants.
Yeah, I could see.
I mean, they just gave him a huge contract.
Yeah. Yep. There's no way they get rid of him. I shouldn't say that, but odds are they won't. I mean, there would be a complete rebuild if they got rid of Odell Beckham Jr. And, you know, I mean, I don't think the Giants are willing to admit they're in a rebuild yet. I have a feeling like they're just kind of holding on to Eli. If they ever cut Eli or whatever, you know, but then again, they need cap space because they're hamstrung by those two players. So I don't know. I just saw that Landon Collins, their star safety, just re-signed with the Redskins. So, you know, they're losing players. They just had to trade Olivier Vernon to the Browns. So
they need to hit the reset button.
Yes. Yes, they do. Badly. So, yeah, it would be great. I would enjoy that. I think he's an instant wide receiver one on almost every team. And, you know, It'd be awesome to get Odell Beckham Jr. Even with all his baggage, all these guys have a little bit of baggage. All these top receivers do. That's why they're so good. I don't think he would be the guy. Do you think that guy would be? Do you think he would be too much of a distraction though if he was with the Bills, or do you think he would buy into the system once he's here? Because there are possibly games where he won't get. It could be a stretch where he only gets like two or three passes, you know, after a few games because of the way that the Bills run their offense. They're not passing a ton. And it seems that they're intent on running the ball more than passing it at this point, at least. Or maybe that was just a product of lack of offensive weapons and offensive linemen. But
how much worse could it be than Eli has been recently?
That's fair. That's fair. Do you think he would be a distraction here, though, if he didn't get the ball like he wanted to?
I don't know. I think there's enough leadership within the organization and players on the team where, you know, they could curb that.
You think he would trust?
Which might be why. Yeah. That might be one of the reasons why they're looking at Antonio Brown in the first place, right? Like, why would they even look at him if he's been like such a diva and everything else? Mm-hmm. Probably because they thought that, you know, they could make it work.
Yeah, agreed. Mike, do you think he would buy into the system? Do you think you could just take any wide receiver? I mean, this doesn't have to be specifically Odell Beckham Jr. It could be Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham Jr., any of these guys that have like kind of a little bit, a very short checkered past, really. I mean, these guys aren't T.O. or Ocho Cinco or anything like that, or Meeshaun back in the day. Do you think the Bills have the kind of culture that could overcome, you know, a wide receiver with a short checkered past?
I think it really depends on the individual. I think just people, not even NFL players, right, or stars, like you want to feel like you're moving in the right direction. And you don't want to, as these guys get older and older, you recognize that your window is getting smaller and smaller to win or make money or whatever your impetus is. So, like, you got to feel like you're moving forward. Hopefully the Bills are on the upswing, right? Hopefully Josh Allen's the franchise quarterback of the future. But right now, the Bills do have a lot of question marks.
Absolutely. They do, but, you know, luckily they addressed some of those today. So we're going to leave on a high note with that. The Bills addressed some decent needs right now. The major need on an offensive line at center position, the guy that's going to be calling out protections for Josh Allen, which, you know, is going to be huge for any second-year quarterback, which would have been huge last year for a rookie quarterback. So I can only see Josh Allen taking some steps forward this season. And remember, the Bills still have 10 draft picks, like we mentioned earlier. So this is a good spot for the Bills to be in. It'll be interesting to see who they bring in on the team, you know, in the next week or so, a free agency, you know, the major other, the second tier and a free agent. So this is a good time. I'm encouraged by this. This is the first, if you think about this, this is the first time that Brandon Bean has actually been able to add the players that he's wanted in free agency, because they did a little bit last year with Star Latulele and, you know, Trent Murphy and, you know, guys like that. Obviously, you know, the year before that, Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, like they've definitely added some really good guys. But this is the first year where Bean has actually had some space to add the guys that he's wanted to. So this year is the first year it was never about money. You know what I mean? This is the first time it's been that way. So we'll see how this goes. And someone brought this up on Twitter, and I don't know if you guys have ever thought of this, but the Bills haven't done that well on the offensive side of the ball in free agency yet. They've done some good drafting and you know, they've gotten some pieces that way, but they really haven't gotten any really good pieces in free agency, if you think about it. I mean, just... So if you look on the offensive line, you're talking Vlad Dukas, Russell Bodine, you know, on wide receiver, Kelvin Benjamin, Andre Holmes, Deontay Thompson. I mean, nothing really sticks out to you as far as guys that have been even steady or decent at the position. So this, the signings today of tight end Tyler Kroft, the signing of center Mitch Morse, the signing of, you know, Spencer Long a week or so ago, the signing of Frank Gore, I guess you could throw in there too. This is going to be a big test. This is the first chance that Bean has had money to spend at this position. The first time he's actually picked up some guys that might actually make an impact. So, you know, I guess it's a wait and see. All right. So I thought we were going to sign off like 20 minutes ago, but we're not. Now we're going to sign off, I think. So for John.
This is the air.
For Mike,
go Bills.
And for me, Nate, go Bills. Still over $50 million in cap space, 10 draft picks. We're just getting started. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.